We often think of the end of Earth as a matter of it getting engulfed by the sun during its red giant phase. But that's not the only possible end for Earth. There are three other ways that Earth might either come to an end or survive a fiery death. First and foremost is the uncertainty surrounding the red giant phase itself. There are uncertainties as to just how much the sun will expand, and while most models suggest that Earth will get engulfed, there's a possibility that it won't. In which case, Earth might survive first as a molten cinder world, orbiting very close to the surface of the red giant sun, or as a frozen former cinder world, forever orbiting a dead white dwarf sun. The next possibility is us. It is physically possible to migrate a planet over a long period of time to follow the sun's expanding habitable zone. This will need to happen far earlier than the red giant phase due to the increasing luminosity of the sun, starting in a few hundred million years. The migration would be accomplished by many repeated passes of a gravitational source, such as a series of asteroids, to nudge Earth's orbit further out to compensate, and eventually during the red giant phase itself, into at least near the orbit of Jupiter, if not further, depending again on the uncertainties about the sun. But that only buys a short time because once the sun is finished with the red giant phase, it becomes a white dwarf, and the solar system as a result will dramatically cool. There, Earth runs into problems as there may be no way to avoid a surface freeze, though Earth at that stage will still maintain some geothermal energy. One estimate on how long it will take the Earth's core to cool puts it on order of 91 billion years from now, long after the sun becomes a white dwarf. Here it seems more likely that by that time in the far future we'd have colonized other star systems nearby, even if they don't have suitable planets. There are always habitats like O'Neill cylinders, and it has been suggested that space offers certain advantages over planets. All you really need is raw materials, and you can get that from asteroids, and put all of your manufacturing and agriculture on habitats. That's actually a somewhat neglected potential solution to the Fermi paradox, that all alien civilizations opt for space instead of their home planets, and that we don't really have a great chance of detecting a group of rotating habitats at great interstellar distances, especially if they're not emitting strongly in radio, or do not pass in front of their star from our perspective. Whether we take advantage of passing stars to set up planetary colonies, or simply habitats, if there aren't suitable worlds to terraform, if raw materials are available or transported from our dying star system, or we outright hollow out an asteroid and turn it into a generational ship that we can use to cross to a nearby star system. That may be simpler than migrating Earth, while knowing that there will be a hard end no matter what when the sun reaches its white dwarf stage. And there are two other problems with migrating Earth around the solar system. The first is the risk that you might miscalculate an encounter with an asteroid or comet, which would need to be about 100 kilometers wide at least to be effective. That's almost certainly larger than the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs. So if one of the gravity assist asteroids were to accidentally hit Earth, then we'd almost certainly go extinct. But that's not the only risk. The second is even worse. With so much gravitational maneuvering going on, there is a chance that we could flat out lose the moon. That's actually one of the worst things that could happen to us, because not only would Earth's climate be heavily disrupted, probably fatally so for us, it would also severely affect Earth's rotation and eventually its orientation. Perhaps something more doable using this technique, however, might be in the cards far earlier than the end of the solar system as we know it. This would be to migrate Mars. Here there is no substantial moon to lose, and second, it doesn't really matter if an uninhabited Mars accidentally gets hit by an asteroid. If it's only sparsely populated, it might be relatively straightforward to evacuate that population as soon as we know we miscalculated on the asteroids. This would give the benefit of a more habitable Mars, but at the same time, terraforming seems easier, but it's actually seeming less easy than was once thought. This stems from recent work on determining just how much carbon dioxide Mars has locked up in its polar caps and such. The easiest way to terraform Mars would be to melt the carbon dioxide and water ice and get a greenhouse effect going. Unfortunately, we now know that Mars simply doesn't have enough carbon dioxide to do it. That means that any terraforming we do is going to require materials off-planet, at Mars, such as huge amounts of CFCs or other heavy greenhouse gases, and that may be forever infeasible. Still, it's possible that Mars may have subsurface deposits of carbon dioxide that we're not aware of that might help make up for it. but there are still further problems. One is that we're not sure how much nitrogen Mars has, and for anything Earth-like, we're going to need that, but we don't see much. But there's also the option of intentionally bombarding Mars with comets that may allow for long-term terraforming, though clearly it wouldn't be safe to live there for a long period of time, until after the bombardment was finished. But there's another type of situation Earth could find itself in sometime before the end of the solar system that could change the equation, and our own equation, very seriously. This goes back to stellar encounters, which I talked about in a recent video, where the motion of the stars brings stellar encounters relatively often across geologic time, offering a perfect opportunity during one of these encounters to colonize another star system, without having to travel vast distances across interstellar space. But there is a way for this to go badly. During a stellar encounter, there isn't much of a chance of any of the planets being affected, because the encounters, while they happen, the last one was just 70,000 years ago, they tend to be distant out in the Oort cloud, and have produced only negligible effects on the orbits of the planets. But in a certain situation, this may not be the case. And if a large enough star passed close enough and slowly enough and repeatedly perturbed Earth, there is a small, but not that small, of a chance that Earth could achieve the Sun's escape velocity and get ejected long before the Sun's red giant phase. Indeed, it could even conceivably happen sometime within the next few million years if the right circumstances are present. Now, there are currently no known future stellar encounters that could do this, but the further out you try to project here, the harder it is to know exactly what will happen in stellar encounters, or even which ones will occur. So we're safe for now, but in the far future it could happen, though probably won't, but the chances are less than 1 in 100,000. So this very likely does occasionally happen to Earth-like exoplanets, and perhaps even inhabited planets out there somewhere in space. So what would happen if Earth got ejected from the solar system by a passing star? It would become a rogue planet right before our very eyes, and there very likely would be nothing we could do about it, even through trying to gravitationally migrate it. There are several possibilities here. It's possible that Earth could get really unlucky and fall into one of the gas giants. But if it did not, it would get ejected from the solar system. If we were still here, this wouldn't really be a fast process, but a rather terrifying long-term one, with all sorts of climate-related changes and instability. But society would go on for a time, and we could prepare some core surviving form of civilization to survive indefinitely using geothermal energy. This would not be a large population, the days of Earth sustaining billions of people would be over, since one way or another we are dependent on the sun. But a core group could remain even as the Earth's surface freezes solid and a permanent state of night takes over. But as long as geothermal energy exists on this world, life could continue as a kind of interstellar analog of an ice shell moon, with hotspots and oceanic vents providing an environment for at least microbial life to hang on, with human technology allowing a surface presence of us, but living more like a true space colony than a species native to this world. At the same time, though, there is a saving grace, time. Any stellar encounter is going to be known about long before it occurs, which means you can plan ahead for it. Preparing Earth and moving most of the population to space habitats could provide an effective mitigation strategy. Those left behind may not have a planet to live on, but would benefit from both ample solar energy and the option to migrate the habitats outward much more easily than migrating a planet as the sun's luminosity increases. That's actually quite an interesting scenario in itself, where you have hundreds of cylinders, each with thousands or more people living on them, slowly but surely migrating outward over time, but with a bold group of volunteers electing to remain on spaceship Earth when it really does become a spaceship and head out into space as a rogue planet. But there's a further dimension. Even if we're long gone by the time an ejection of Earth could happen, the story may not necessarily end with Earth forever wandering the galaxy. There is a non-zero chance, very low, like 1 in 300 billion, that after a long period of wandering, rogue planet Earth could get captured by an entirely different star system. If by some lucky chance life survived, even microbial, it might flourish again, adapt, and live far longer than it would have in its solar system of origin. The odds are terrible for this scenario. Earth will most probably be destroyed by the sun. But it's fun to think about an Earth living a new life as a rogue planet or even a member of another star system entirely, and if it's a red dwarf, it could be in that situation orbiting a living star for potentially trillions of years. What an odd state of affairs that would be, but I leave you with one last thought. The odds here are terrible. Just to get ejected by a passing star is approaching 1 in between 15 and 100,000. And to get captured by another star, the odds are even worse. But the odds aren't really so bad if you look at the whole of the observable universe. We know Earth-like planets exist. We also know that life can exist in the universe. But what we don't know is how likely it is. But amongst the 1 billion trillion stars present in the observable universe, then this sort of ejection scenario has probably happened to someone, sometime, or at least a microbe planet. At least the ejection part. Getting captured is less likely. That has to happen under very specific special circumstances. In our situation, it would be very unlikely for a rogue planet to manage to get captured in a solar orbit around the sun. Not impossible with Jupiter involved, but it's an interesting take on the dynamics possible in the universe. Panspermia indeed. Only this time, not a rock, but an entire ecosystem could get transferred somewhere else in the galaxy. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier. And be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.
Oh, bloody cameo appearance. John's stuck in a loop. How do I turn him off?